Good morning and happy Sunday, and welcome to this episode of On the Weekend Edition. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and I am feeling great. I hope that you're feeling great, because for the next hour, I'm going to be with you talking current events and, of course, my topic for the week. We're also going to get NFL picks from the Petty, and we'll get into some news. But, you know, first, I want to share something with you that has me pretty excited. Last week, of course, I did the segment on the emasculation of black men in the media and why I believe that this is happening. And quite honestly, I was a little nervous. I did not know what to expect as far as flack coming back to me, possibly things being misunderstood or conflated. And I got to be honest, I'm very happy. I didn't get any of that. I got mostly support from people who, even if they did not see it my way initially, said that they would try to look at things a little bit differently. And that's all I can ask for. Think a little bit differently, pay attention, and come up with your own thoughts about what's going on. But I did receive two letters, and one I'm going to read to you because it's from a gentleman from the LGBTQ community, and it wasn't negative. It was thought-provoking, which is what I love, and I'm going to read it to you. It says, "Dear Mr. Pettaway, imagine dreaming of being a black actor all of your life as a black man, and then realizing that because you are a black man, your role is limited in Hollywood as a black actor. Then magnify that by 1,000 times because you are a gay black man, and then realizing that getting the role of a gay black man, which you are proud to be, is like getting a needle in a haystack. Can you imagine living against those odds and dreaming against those odds? So please, I understand what you are saying, and it's not that I disagree. In many ways, I do agree with you. I just don't want you or your listeners to think that black men in the gay community take any pride or get any joy out of seeing the emasculation of black men. We don't." I have read that letter no less than 5 times, and I've thought deeply about the things that were said in that letter, and I can appreciate and respect the view. I think it's that kind of communication between the straight and homosexual community that needs to be had all of the time, just honest but very respectful, and I appreciate the letter very, very much. So beyond that, we're going to actually get into the thing that I love doing most, and that's telling the news. And as always, I'm going to start with news in Baltimore, and I've had people say, you know, why are you always talking about news in Baltimore when you stream around the world? Well, my answer is I've been around the world, and I've lived several places, but I love Baltimore, I was born and raised here, and I work here, and since this is where I started, this is where the news starts for me. So hopefully that answers that question. Now, most of you know that I do news Monday through Friday on the April Watch Live show at 10:30. All right, that's a plug. But hey, that's where I am Monday through Friday at 10:30. I'm on the April Watch Live show doing news. The problem for me, though, is every single day I look at news stories, I see violence and I see political corruption in Baltimore. And I try to avoid reporting on those stories because I don't want people around the world to think that Baltimore is just full of crime and political corruption. It's not. Now, it is a tough city. And like most major cities, it helps if you learn to keep your head on a swivel, make common sense safety moves, and if you can, stay out of areas that you know are prone to violent situations. So I've got to do my job. I've got to do the news. I've got to tell you about violence. I've got to tell you about political corruption in the city, because that is my job. But in addition to that, I'm going to try and counter those stories with some of the beautiful things that go on in Baltimore, because there's a lot of that going on as well. All right, enough of that. So on with the news. Sinai Hospital, well, it looks like they're expanding. They broke ground Wednesday on a $50 million project that will double the size of the emergency department that they already have in Northwest Baltimore. Officials said the expansion will allow for larger patient rooms and a larger trauma center for seriously injured patients. And apparently the design of the emergency department will improve patient flow and enable the hospital to treat more patients without adding beds. Now, the current emergency department will not close. It will stay open during the construction, and the project is supposed to be completed in December of 2024. And the Baltimore Police Department is reporting that at least 6 people were shot late Wednesday into early Tuesday morning, and all but 2 of the victims were women. Police responded to a quadruple shooting in Northeast Baltimore Tuesday night and a double shooting around 1 a.m. Wednesday morning. At around midnight in the 5500 block of Bawley's Lane, 3 women ages 38, 35, and 25 were shot in the lower back. And the department also said a man showed up at a hospital saying he was also shot in the back from the same shooting. They're all, as of right now, in stable condition, and police spent hours investigating the shooting. Residents say that although the police are there daily, they aren't stopping anything. One resident said that he thought it was fireworks at first and then realized it was automatic weapons. About an hour after that shooting, a man was shot in the back of the head and a woman was shot in the arm in Fells Point. Now, according to data from Baltimore City Police, in 2022, there have been 556 non-deadly shootings in Baltimore and 254 homicides. The Baltimore City Council held a quarterly crime update with the Baltimore City Police Department this week, and they were not happy. They were trying to get an idea as to what the Baltimore City Police was doing to handle the rising crime in the city. The hearing was held Wednesday, just a few months after several of the same council members led by Councilman Eric Costello and Mark Conway demanded a new deployment strategy for the BPD before entering the summer months, which historically marks a rise in crime. Conway said he wants to see more data from the BPD to help illustrate what's working and what's not as communities continue to grapple with gun violence. Both the Baltimore City Police Department and Baltimore City Council are preparing themselves for new policies from the newly elected Baltimore City State's Attorney, Ivan Bates, who promises to be much tougher on crime and repeat offenders than his predecessor, Marilyn Mosby. He believes that keeping repeat offenders off the streets will reduce crime tremendously and make the city safer not just for residents, but also for first responders. Also in the news in Baltimore last week, Fox 45 is reporting that the Maryland Court of Special Appeals denied a motion on Thursday by Dan Cox, the Republican nominee for Maryland governor, to stop mail-in ballots from being counted before Election Day. The Maryland Board of Elections started counting mail-in ballots yesterday, although most counties won't start until later. If Cox appeals it, it will still be considered. In 2020, during the pandemic, Maryland counted mail-in ballots before Election Day because of an executive order by Governor Larry Hogan. However, Hogan blocked an effort to make the practice permanent during this legislative session. But in the July 19 primary, several high-profile races took several days to decide because of the backlog in Maryland County. And to respond to the primary problems, the Maryland Board of Elections asked the court to allow for early counting. Election observers have said previously that races called so late diminishes public confidence in elections and should be avoided. The number of mail-in ballots in recent elections have dramatically increased since their first major widespread usage in 2020. However, Cox said mail-in ballots counted early creates an unconstitutional methodology for counting ballots. He also said that Hogan's executive order that applied to 2020 is no longer in effect and should not be used. Cox, who has been endorsed by former President Donald Trump, does not believe that President Biden won the 2020 election. Trump and his allies have discouraged the use of mail-in ballots and claim that they are more susceptible to fraud. You know, something else happened in the news this week, and I can't wrap my mind around why. I literally keep saying, why would you do this? But a U.S. Army major doctor and their physician wife were arrested for allegedly plotting to give Russia confidential medical information about people connected to the American military and the government. The couple, 39-year-old Jamie Lee Henry and anesthesiologist Anna Gabrielian, 36, according to federal prosecutors, aimed to help Russia and its ongoing war against Ukraine. Now, the Rockville, Maryland couple believed that they were passing medical information to a Russian embassy employee, but in reality, the recipient of the confidential material was an undercover FBI agent. Now, all of this is in an 8-count indictment that is unsealed in the Baltimore federal court. So apparently, here's how this went down. An FBI agent posing as a Russian embassy employee in mid-August approached Gabrielian, an employee at Johns Hopkins, and asked her about the assistance she had offered to the embassy several months earlier. Gabrielian agreed to meet the agent in a Baltimore hotel room on August 17th. Later that same day, she called the agent to reaffirm that the couple was committed to helping Russia. During the meeting, Gabrielian had told the FBI agent that she was motivated by patriotism toward Russia to provide any assistance she could to Russia, even if it meant being fired or going to jail. Now, this is all according to the indictment. Gabrielian allegedly told the agent that Henry, her spouse, was currently a more important source for Russia than she was. Since Henry had more helpful information, including on how the U.S. military establishes an army hospital and war conditions, and about previous training the U.S. military provided to Ukrainian military personnel. When Gabrielian and Henry jointly met with the agent at the hotel on the night of August 17th, Henry explained that he had actually looked into volunteering to join the U.S.-Russian army after the conflict in Ukraine began. But Russia wanted people with combat experience, and he simply didn't have any. At that same meeting, Henry gave the agent medical information related to a current Defense Department employee, a retired Army veteran, the spouse of an Army veteran, and the spouse of two deceased Army veterans. If convicted, Henry and Gabrielian face a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison for conspiracy, a maximum of 5 years in prison for disclosing individually identifiable health information. Like I said, I asked myself, why do people in the military who know how far the government's defense against spy networks go, why do they continue to think they can get away with something like this? I mean, it's not going to happen. I spent a lot of time in the Army, and I know what it took to get my security clearance, and there is zero wiggle room. And they tell you right off the break, if you involve yourself in any suspicious behavior, you will without a doubt go straight to prison. End of story. So I'm trying to figure out, with all of this technology, Why does anyone think that they're going to do anything against the U.S. government as an employee of the U.S. government? It makes no sense to me. They watch your every move. And speaking of Russia, the U.S. Embassy in Moscow is urging American citizens residing in Russia to get the hell out, like right now. Amid Vladimir Putin's escalation of the war in Ukraine, U.S. citizens should not travel to Russia, and those residing or traveling in Russia should depart Russia immediately, while limited commercial travel options remain. This security alert came down from the U.S. Embassy in Moscow on Tuesday. The embassy urged U.S. citizens to make independent arrangements as soon as possible, as commercial flight options are extremely limited, but overland car and bus routes are still open. The embassy said it has limited options to help Americans in Russia, whose transportation options may suddenly become even more limited. The alert also warned Americans that Russia may refuse to acknowledge U.S. citizenship for dual nationals, try to prevent their departure from Russia, prevent access to consular assistance, or even conscript dual nationals for military service. The embassy added that basic human rights such as the right to peaceful assembly and freedom of expression are not guaranteed in Russia. The alert also warned to avoid all political or social protest and do not photograph security personnel at these events. Russian authorities have arrested U.S. citizens who have participated in demonstrations. In other words, the only thing that you should be doing as an American in Russia right now, if you haven't already done so, is packing your bags, securing your passports, and heading to the airport and coming back to the States. You are not safe where you are in that country. End of story, point blank. The other big story in the news, probably the biggest in the news last week, was Hurricane Ian and how it stacks up in U.S. weather history. Now, while Ian is not done impacting the United States, the storm's strike on Florida already puts it in the record books. The devastation from Hurricane Ian's direct hit in southwest Florida is still being tallied, but the storm's sheer force as it crashed into the coastline has already placed Ian in the upper echelon of hurricanes to strike the United States. When Ian finally made landfall as a Category 4 hurricane, it carried with it a maximum sustained wind of 150 miles an hour and a minimum central pressure of 940 millibars. Ian became the 37th major hurricane, a designation reserved for storms of Category 3 intensity or greater, to have ever struck the state of Florida, and just the 15th to be rated a Category 4 or higher. Records of hurricane intensity date back all the way to 1851. While it is too early to tell whether Ian will stack up in terms of lives lost, Florida has had a history of deadly hurricanes, with fatalities generally dropping in recent years due to improved building codes and much greater warning in advance of storm. The deadliest storm in the modern record to strike Florida was the Okeechobee Hurricane of 1928, which is estimated to have killed at least 2,500 people, with some estimates taking the death toll markedly higher, according to the National Weather Service. It is also too early to tell if Ian will rank among the costliest hurricanes to hit the United States, but it seems likely to do so. According to the NOAA, the top five costliest cyclones in U.S. history are Hurricane Katrina at $186.3 billion, Hurricane Harvey at $148.8 billion, and Hurricane Maria at $107.1 billion. All of those storms, with the exception of Katrina, have struck the United States within the past 5 years. An analyst with Fitch Ratings estimated that the insured cost losses in Florida could be anywhere from $25 billion to $40 billion, with more damage set to come along the southeast coast when Ian makes landfall in South Carolina. Now listen, I'm just going to say what a lot of people have said to me, what a lot of people are thinking but have not said I've heard in the media yet. I want to take you back about a week and a half, because I know the news cycle is fast these days and it's easy to forget. But about a week and a half ago, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, in his arrogance and lack of compassion, decided he was going to lie to and then fly some migrants to Martha's Vineyard because he did not want his state to have to pay for their shelter and their food over an extended period of time. He felt like it was not his duty, responsibility, or his ministry to have to do something like that. So he took $12 million out of the legislative budget for the exact purposes of transporting migrants somewhere other than the state of Florida. And he was very proud of that move. He bragged about it, and he considered that move a great move for the red state of Florida and the Floridians, right? He also, as a freshman congressman in 2013, when Hurricane Sandy hit New York and New Jersey, voted a big fat no in relief funds for those hurricane-ravaged areas. And now, migrant-free of 2 weeks, and almost a full decade later, after he voted no to help those in a situation in which he now finds himself, DeSantis is banking on the short memory of the United States government and is now asking for federal help in the way of funds. Now, my grandmother used to say all the time, God is a funny God and one with an incredible memory. So Ron DeSantis, it is Sunday, and I think you need to be taken to church. This one here is for you.
Maybe God is trying to tell you something.
I think we get the point, right? and listen, I'm a little bit petty, no doubt about it. It's in my name. I'm a little bit petty when it comes to stuff like that. And I think that Ron DeSantis is not the best human being. I think his lack of compassion shows through in everything that he does. And unfortunately, karma does not only affect him, but he is the head of a state, and it affects all of the residents of that state. So I feel bad for those people, but the vast majority voted for this guy. And they keep him in office. So a vast majority of Floridians in that state believe in what Ron DeSantis believes in. Their thinking is in alignment with each other. They support his tactics, his actions, and his policies. So you get what you get. All right, so look, I'm going to jump off of that. But I do want to jump into something that was also in the news and stays in the news for some reason. And that's the whole Ayma Udoka thing with him and Nia Long. And I wanted to talk about, although they weren't married, I wanted to talk about the divorce rate among black women. Because right now, black women were the only group that had a higher divorce rate than marriage rate in this country, with nearly 31 divorces per 1,000 married women. So I wanted to bring in someone who, you know, has gone through her own divorce after having been married for a very long time. Tiffany Johnson, she's here with me today. And I just wanted to ask her a couple of questions on how, you know, things looked for her right now. And just probe and find out what marriage was like for her and why divorce became her option. So let's give Tiffany Johnson a very warm 1500 Radio welcome. Good morning, Tiffany. Welcome to the show. I really appreciate you being here this morning, and I am so glad that you're willing to take some time with us and share your experience in your divorce, because it's very fresh after a long marriage. I don't know exactly how long the marriage was, but I know anybody on the outside looking at the marriage would think that you had the perfect situation. A good-looking husband, beautiful kids, you're attractive, all successful. So apparently this is happening a lot, especially with black women. As I mentioned, black women are getting divorced at a rate of 4-1 for every one woman that's getting married that's black. There are four women that are black that are getting divorced. And I'm trying to figure out what this phenomenon is all about from a woman's perspective. So are you ready to dive into some questions for me?
Sure, Brian, I'm ready.
All right. So first of all, how long were you married?
I was married for over 30 years.
Jeez. Yeah, well, it's a long time. Definitely a long time. I mean, you're not that old right now. So you were married like as a kid. How old when you got married?
I was 22.
Yeah,
I just turned 22 when I got married.
Yeah, you were a baby. A baby. You guys like raised each other. You know what I mean?
So, exactly.
So let me ask you, what do you think the biggest reason for the high divorce rate is in this country?
You know, I think it has a lot to do with just basic incompatibility. I think that's the foundation for a lot of things, and it trickles into other facets of the marriage relationship. So if there's sexual incompatibility, then that could lead to infidelity. And, you know, we've heard that that's a high cause for a lot of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if there's like financial incompatibility, then that leads to money problems, which is another reason people get divorced.
Right.
And then there's like moral incompatibility, and that could lead to emotional and sadly sometimes physical abuse. So, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. You've got emotional intelligence incompatibility, and that leads to poor communication and, you know, just all kinds of arguing and conflict. But it all stems from basic incompatibility.
Makes sense to me. And it is. There's a lot of components to marriage, and it's a lot easier to get into than it is to stay into, and certainly a lot easier than it is to get out of. Listen, right. Why do you believe the divorce rate is higher among blacks, especially black women?
Right. You know, I think we have to look back at how we were raised as children. Believe it or not, I think it goes all the way back there.
Really?
Because I don't know if this was your experience, but I can remember hearing the older folks say that children should be seen and not heard.
Absolutely.
Or like when a child would cry, or we would say, you know, throw a tantrum, the elders would say, oh, you want to cry?
I'll give you something to cry about. Yep.
Right? And so we didn't empower our children to have a voice, nor did we encourage them to express their emotions. And so they carry this belief that's just been ingrained in their minds that you don't express how you feel. And then when you do feel something, you better not show it. And so I think that's especially true when you think about our young boys, because they're told, you know, toughen up, be a man. And so we get into these relationships and we don't have any tools to communicate in a healthy way. So that's just one reason I think divorce is higher among Blacks. And then I don't even want to get on the curse of counseling. I saw a statistic not too long ago that said that it was like roughly 25% of Black Americans seek mental health care. Mm-hmm. And that was compared to like 40% of their white counterparts. And so those of us who grew up in the church, we were told that all we needed was God to pray about it, have faith. And like if you sought a counselor, somehow you were either weak or you usurped the power of God to work in your life. And I'm not against God. Please don't get me wrong. But again, when you have those beliefs in your mind, you don't know how to express yourself. And then when there's an issue, you're not encouraged to go seek help.
Right.
So you combine all this stuff and you're already fighting an uphill battle just to navigate your own stuff, let alone communicate effectively with a partner in a marriage. You see what I mean?
I do see what you mean. Speaking of religion, do you feel like religion gives people like a false sense of security in marriage? You know, you take your vows for granted, do anything, and the person is supposed to accept it because it's death do you part, for richer, for poor, sickness and health, better for worse. Do you think that plays a part in why people stay in marriages so long when they should not?
I do. I think in the early years, you know, that could definitely be something that's in the back of, you know, in the back of your mind. And then you just end up thinking that the person's always going to be there because they said those vows before God and man, so to speak. But, you know, it's really a crazy thought, right? Because imagine if we asked a little kid, like a five-year-old, and we said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And at the age of five, that child says, I want to be a doctor. And then we hold them to it for the rest of their life, not giving them any autonomy to change their mind or to pursue something different. And it's kind of almost that same thing when we say these vows. Now, I want to say this, and I don't know if it matters or not, but you mentioned vows.
Right.
I'm a hopeless romantic. I mean, I sing all the love songs. I love a good, passionate movie. I cry at weddings. I love love. And I do love what the wedding vows mean. I just don't know if we have to abide by them when we're not all the way fulfilled. And we're talking about divorce, and I just kind of want to throw that in there, that we really have to look at it deeply before we just hold on tight and say, no matter what, I'm going to be miserable, but I'm not leaving this marriage.
Right. So let me ask you this. Kids are a huge component when you're considering divorce, when you're considering separating. Do you think or do you believe it's the obligation of married couples to stay together for the children, even if they've fallen out of love?
That's a tough one. I mean, it's not tough to answer, but I feel that one so deeply. I don't think that couples should stay married just for the kids. But I will say that children are a huge factor in the decision-making process, but they shouldn't be the only deciding factor. I'll tell you, I was so worried about my decision and how it was going to impact my children. I mean, I loved being a mother more than anything. And, excuse me, I was so scared that I was going to lose relationships with my kids, and they're adults. And so, but it still worried me. I was so worried at how they were going to view me. I can't count the number of days and nights that I cried about this decision, thinking about how it was going to impact my kids. And I still cry today because they're still processing my decision.
Right. Right.
You know, and I told them, I talked to each of them individually, and I said, I wish that the decision that I'm making for me didn't impact you, but it does, and I'm so sorry. It was just a really, really tough thing, but I read this book, and it was called The Conscious Divorce, mm-hmm. and one of the chapters was entitled Example. And the lady who wrote the book, she had the same struggle because she had a daughter.
Right.
And she was so concerned about what her decision was going to do. She made the decision to leave her marriage as well. But in that chapter example, she said that she thought to herself one day, if my daughter is feeling the same way I'm feeling when she's married, what advice would I give her? And then she decided to lead by example. And that released me. And it released the burden that I had. And I just had to trust that all the years of parenting and relationship building that I had done was going to pay off. It might not be immediate, but I just had to trust the process. So I started thinking, you know, if my cup is empty, how can I pour into my children?
Right.
And if I'm not my best self, then how can I be their best mom? So hard as it is, I do believe that one of the greatest gifts we can give our children is to be a self-actualized parent. And you know, too, Brian, if I could share.
Sure.
Speaking of children and how they deal with the decision and how they deal with divorce, it's going to change them. It's going to change their lives, whether they are young children or whether they're adults. I just felt like it was important for me to create a space for them to talk this through. And sometimes, you know, they might be silent. Sometimes they might be upset. But I didn't want to slip back into that old way of thinking. Mm-hmm. You know how I was saying earlier about children are to be seen and not heard?
Right.
If you want to cry, I'll give you something to cry about.
Right.
That belief had to be deconstructed. We're in 2022, and I felt like it was vital that I create space for them to communicate and express how my decision was impacting them. And I think it's been very healing for both, for all of us, actually.
When you gave them that ability to speak candidly to you, did you find out things about your kids that you didn't know previously? Did they tell you that they had noticed things had changed, or they were expecting you guys to get to this point, or were they really surprised?
I was the one that was surprised. I talked to my oldest first, mm-hmm. and that child said that she had known something was different for years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, really?
Wow.
And, I didn't know. I thought we were putting on a good front. we didn't argue. We didn't fight. That was the thing that, you know, I thought was just going to shock them because they didn't witness that from us. But my children are very perceptive people.
Right.
And they sensed that there was a disconnect for years. Some of the text messages that I received from them, my oldest, the day after I shared my decision, sent me a text that said, I'm okay, I get it, and I'm proud of you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sorry, you can tell this still really means a lot
to me. I do. I get it. I understand.
I understand. Yeah. See, my little girl was 5 years old when her mom and I divorced. And I think the thing that made it easier for her is, A, she was very young, but because her mom and I stayed friends, like we're still good friends to this day. There was none of that arguing, screaming. We decided to end before resentment got the best of us, and we started to go in that direction. So we remained and maintained our friendship. But there was no romance. There was no passion in the relationship. So the question that I got to ask you is, how do you cope? Because you were in a marriage for 30 years, and I don't know at what point it kind of soured for you, but how do you cope with living in the same house with someone when there's no romance?
I don't think I can give my real answer on the radio. But, okay, let me think about this. No romance, living in the same house. Okay. Well, I like to think about, there's this video game. I don't know if you're familiar with this video game, but it's called Crash Bandicoot. And I can remember my kids played it years and years ago. And it's this fox, and he goes through this land. And so he's jumping on boxes and blowing the boxes apart. And each time he deconstructs a box, he gets points.
Right.
But every now and then, one of those boxes has TNT in it, dynamite. And so as he's going along, he's growing in his level. So he might pass level one, and he might pass level two and level three. But when the dynamite blows him up, he doesn't have to start the whole game over. He just goes back to his most recent checkpoint.
Right.
So I look at that kind of like how things were for me when I was living in the same house with no romance. I decided that I was going to look at all the levels that we had attained. I wasn't going to look at the one box of dynamite, which was the no romance that, you know, was going to blow us up. I just decided I'm going to focus on the positive things. And I was able to do that until a decision was made. That allowed us to continue coexisting in this house, talking like we have since, you know, laughing, getting along, going out to dinner. But it's a mindset. And you just have to try to extract the good that you do have. And, you know, sometimes that's enough for folks.
Right.
Sometimes that 80% is okay for them to continue and stay married forever. But for others, it's not. That's the cool thing, is you get to decide. You know, nobody else can tell you what your marriage should look like, what should be okay, what you should accept. And I'm not even saying that my main reason for deciding to divorce was lack of romance. I go back to basic incompatibility. I had grown and evolved and became someone different than who I was when I was 22. And we no longer were a good fit. And like you, before allowing the resentment and the friction to set in and create a house of unrest, I made a choice that was best for me.
Yeah, that's got to be hard, though, because the person that you grew apart from or evolved from, if they have not, then that can be devastating to that person. And I know you've got a heart of gold. So having to make that decision, especially when the other party or your ex-husband is not feeling the same, it's got to be, I don't know what's worse. I don't know if it's worse being on the side that's saying, hey, I'm done, or hearing it, you know, that the other person is done. But I know it had to take a toll on you.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think either side, I mean, neither side is easy. This, by far, was one of the hardest decisions I have ever had to make in my life. And it's because he's a great guy.
Right.
I mean, like I said earlier, we weren't arguing. We weren't fighting. There could have been some emotional bullying from time to time and some, you know, passive aggressive stuff. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but I was never physically abused or anything like that. I'll just tell you, the decision wasn't made hastily. It took a lot of introspection. And you know, one of the harder things, because I love people and I love being around people and talking to people, this was a decision that I had to make by myself,
right,
for myself.
Right.
So I didn't talk to anybody about it for months.
Oof.
It was just me and myself in the mirror, because I needed to know that when I made the decision, that it was something that I was going to be able to stick to regardless of what anybody in my circle thought about it.
Well,
it's not easy, especially when you still love and care for the person. And you know, can I go back to the vow?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Earlier?
Yeah.
One of the things that gave me peace was when I started thinking about those marriage vows that I said 30 some years ago, I thought there's got to be a way that I can still live those out, even though I'm not married. Like the whole till death do us part, I thought, I can still cherish him. What were the ones you said? You said love and...
It's love and obey.
Yeah, I can, right, still love him.
Forgiveness, I mean, for, was it better or worse?
For better or worse.
Sickness,
yeah,
and in health.
Mm-hmm.
And until death do you part.
Right. Okay, so I can still love him, and I still do love him, even though I'm no longer married to him.
Okay.
I can still be there for him should sickness come into his life, even though I'm not married to him. And I just started thinking, there are still some of these things that I can employ and walk out in my life, even though he's no longer my husband. I didn't take out the eraser. I'm not erasing him out of my life. I'm just releasing myself to grow in a different direction.
Now, look, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, right? But if you're going to involve someone else in your life, because you're still young enough, if you're going to involve someone else in your life, how do you expect that person to sit with you being still so dedicated to someone that you're no longer married to? How does that work for you? Because it sounds great if you're going to be by yourself for the rest of your life. But men, I don't know. I don't know how men are going to feel about it. I mean, you're supposed to be their wife, their support. You know what I mean? How do you think they're going to feel about that?
Well, I think there's balance in everything. And there's a million ways that you can display love to a person. So when I say that I can still love my ex-husband, whether I'm married to him or not, that could mean I'm not going to degrade him when I'm talking about my divorce.
Gotcha.
That could be what love looks like for me.
Gotcha.
At the end of the day, he's still the father of my children. And I will not engage with anyone who won't respect him in that role.
Okay.
So because we have these amazing children together, he's going to be part of my life in some shape or fashion. So if I do meet someone and they want to be part of my life, they will have to accept him as my children's father and respect that position. And if they can't do that, then they're not for me.
So, yeah, I understand. I understand what you're saying. I kind of felt the same way once I was divorced about moving on and having someone having to accept the situation or the arrangement that I have with my ex-wife. And you're right. If that person doesn't understand, then obviously they're not the person for you. So let me ask you another question. What would you say to someone who is contemplating or in the middle of a divorce right now?
The first thing is, you know, in the words of William Shakespeare, I would say, to thine own self be true. You know, we grow up with so many messages in the media on what it looks like to be a good wife, what it looks like to be a good mother. And there's never going to be the perfect scenario that fits your story. So I would just, you know, find what your story is and be true to that. But when you're being true to your story, I just would encourage everybody to do that with compassion. One of the things that I really had to remember, because like I said earlier, this is tough. And there's no winner when you're talking about divorce.
Right.
And there have been times where my ex-husband may have shared his emotions or feelings in an unsavory way, you know, lashed out or vented. And as hurtful as it was, I just kind of had to remember that even though this is a grown man talking to me, there's a hurting little boy on the inside. Mm-hmm. And so while I knew I had to maintain my resolve, I still wanted to walk through this thing with compassion and understand, you know, they always say hurting people hurt people. But I just wanted to still extend compassion. And I wanted to be gracious to him, but I also wanted to be gracious to myself. The stages of grief are not linear. It's not like you go through step one, step two, step three. And I found myself bouncing around. You know, there were times that I felt strong, and then there were times that I thought I was going to fall apart. Other times that I felt like, yes, this is the best decision. This is the right decision for me. And then other times I would look in the mirror and say, Tiffany, what the heck are you doing?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I had to be patient and gracious with myself. And then also my children. They were all very understanding and supportive. But as they started to walk through this, their emotions also were all over the place.
Right.
And, you know, still, my children, it's a very tender topic for me because there was a time, Brian, when I didn't think I was going to be able to have children. And so to be gifted with these amazing people, you can only imagine how much I wanted to protect and shield them from any kind of hurt.
Right.
And now I'm the one that's turning their world upside down.
So let me ask you, they have, clearly they have an allegiance to both you and your ex-husband. I mean, it's their father. And he, like you said, he was an amazing guy, a great father. So they have to be torn. Like they have to be torn between how he feels, how you're feeling, and trying to show support for both. Have you found that in them where they're bouncing back and forth in their emotions between who's at fault or trying to blame?
Yes, I found them having a really difficult time feeling like if they shared support for me, then perhaps they felt like they were somehow dishonoring their father.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be honest with you. I wanted them to be there for him. But I can remember this one time where I hate to admit it because it sounds shallow, but this is just real. One time, one of the children took him to a concert, and I felt some kind of way about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking, well, why didn't they invite me to go?
Right.
They haven't taken me to a concert. And so when I tell you that this decision it's liberating, it's freeing, but it is hard as hell.
Right.
So the best thing that I felt like I could do was to encourage them to be there for him in whatever capacity they felt. And as a parent, I just was going to have to deal with what that looked like on my own.
Hmm. Is there any fear in you for moving on? Like, I don't know the situation is who's leaving what behind or who's giving up what. But is there any fear with you moving on, not being in the secure place that you've been as far as home and finances and family? I mean, you're not, neither one of us are spring chickens, but I mean, you're not 20. You know what I'm saying? You're not 25. I mean, you've lived most of your life at this point. So is there any fear in finding someone new and having to start all over again? Or are you just so relieved at not being in it that you don't even give those thoughts, those cares a thought?
Oh, the fear is very real. Because none of us have a crystal ball. We don't know. There's nothing promised to us for tomorrow. So I've thought about all those things. I've thought about, what if I lose my job? I'm not so concerned about finding security in another man, because at this point, I have to be a whole woman all mm-hmm. by myself.
Right.
But I welcome love. I welcome exploration with another person. I'm not closed off to it, nor am I a hater of marriage. You know, I welcome all of that, but that's not the thing that is top on my list. I think for me, because I have given myself to my family for so long, I'm just ready to give myself to me. So I'm looking forward to the season of self-discovery and figuring out who I am all by myself. And if I'm fortunate enough to meet someone who matches with me, then I will embrace that when the time comes.
Wow. Well, listen, I am so thankful for you being here. You are now an official member of 1500 Radio. I wish you the best in your endeavors. And, you know, and both you and your ex-husband in the healing process of divorce. Took me a minute. Yeah, I mean, it really did. I wanted to be out of my marriage, but at the same time, I still wanted to be friends with the person that I was married to. And so it took a minute for that to happen. So good luck. And thank you so much for being so candid and honest with us today. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Brian. There's one last thing that I want to share with all the listeners of 1500 Radio. And I do wish this for them, whether they are in the middle of a divorce or not. There's this song by Angie Stone called Happy Being Me. And the chorus says, I'm so happy being me. I'm regretting nothing about me because I'm too busy living life and giving love freely. I'm so happy being me. And that's what I want for myself. That's what I want for you and everybody who's listening and the members of 1500 Radio. So I wish everyone else the best as well.
Wow. Thank you so much, Tiffany. You take care of yourself. Have a great weekend, by the way, and stay dry. All right?
You do the same.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, well, we've come upon that time of the show. You know what time it is. It's time to reach out to the Petty and get those NFL picks for this week. He didn't do too bad last week. I mean, I actually made some money from listening to him last week. Hopefully, he can steer us in the right direction again. So let's give the Petty a call and see what he's got to say this week.
Brother B, how you doing, man?
If it isn't my man, the Petty, how you doing this week, man?
I'm just doing fantastic. A little surprised at some of the outcomes from last week.
Yeah, I bet you are. You didn't do too bad, though. I made a little bit of money from you.
Well, I tell you this much, I'm back on track with my Thursday night pick.
You are?
Those Dolphins fell to those Bengals.
Yeah, one of them Dolphins fell real hard. I'm praying for him.
Yeah, that didn't look good. That was a bad thing.
Yeah.
That was. But let's move right along, Brother B, because we have something that's going on right now as your show is going on. Neither one of these teams should have home field advantage because they're not even here in the United States.
Yeah.
They are across the pond in London. We're talking about those Norsemen, those Vikings, and those marching Saints from New Orleans. Now, from what I can see, Winston Crablegs, Jameis Winston.
God, man, why you give this man such a hard time, man?
Well, we know the backstory behind that.
I do.
But he looked like the same guy that used to play for Tampa. And you know what they did with Tampa? They got him out of there. So I'm just not convinced that he's the man for the Saints.
Okay.
So with that being said, I like Kirk Cousins. I like that Minnesota offense. I have them taking down the Saints in London. Now, we're going to move right along to our 1 o'clock games. And what I want to do this week, to usually go from the top to the bottom, I'm going to go from the bottom to the top.
Okay.
And we're going to start with the Chargers. Going to see Lovie and the boys down in Houston to see those Texans. I'm sorry, Lovie. I like you as a coach. That team has a lot of talent. But the Lightning Bolts will come in there, and they will beat the Texans. Moving right along.
The Chargers aren't impressing me, bro.
Well,
they're not impressing me.
But take the Chargers.
All right.
Next game, Doug Peterson, the man that gave those Philadelphia pitchers, those Eagles, their first and only Super Bowl, will revisit Philadelphia. He will go back to see his old team when the Jacksonville Jaguars play the Philadelphia Eagles. That Jacksonville team, they really impressed me last week. They look pretty good. I like them. But I'm sorry, Dougie, your boys, they know you as a coach. They know your weaknesses. They know your strengths, just like he knows theirs. But Philadelphia is a better team than Jacksonville. Take those Pigeons, those Philadelphia Eagles at home over the Jaguars.
All right, all right.
Next, moving right along, we have those J-E-T-S, Jets going to Pittsburgh to see those Steelers. And you know what? I told you Joe Flacco was not the pilot for that team. They made a quarterback change. So, Matt Daddy Wilson will be playing in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. And I'm not convinced about the Steelers with that full got the Mitch Trubisky, so...
No, the Steelers must win this game.
So I am taking the Steelers.
Oh, okay. All right. You came to your side. I was about to say, bro.
Now we have the Bears going to see the New York Giants, those G-men who look pretty good against the Cowboys. So
say that again. The Giants
like
did what?
The Bears.
The Giants look good against the Cowboys, right?
They look pretty good. Even though they lost, they look pretty good against the Cowboys.
Right. Okay.
Now, I'm really not convinced about Danny Dimes, but I like what they did against the Cowboys. I like what I saw. And that Giant defense is not that bad.
No, they're not.
So, look for the Giants to take down the Bears at home. This one is a big game. This is a must-win for Tennessee. They will be traveling to Indianapolis to... You know what? I'm going to start calling them the Stallions because they don't deserve the Colt name. They'll be traveling to Indianapolis to see that team. And Matty Ice might be back. I don't know.
I was going to say, he looked good, right?
He might be back. So with that being said, sorry, Tennessee. You'll take another loss as the Colts will slightly edge that game out at home. Now, I'm going to tell you something, Brother B. I had to think about this game real hard because I like this team. They have a lot of injuries to key players, but those pesky Lions, I like them. They will be hosting those sea chickens from Seattle, the Seahawks. And I'm just not convinced with Geno Smith. I'm sorry. He's no Russell Wilson. He's a journeyman. He's okay, but I like my pesky Lions. I like that team. That might be my new team in the future. I like the coach. I like what they're doing there in Detroit. I'm looking for those pesky Lions to take down those sea chickens, those Seahawks Sunday.
Man, I'm a Geno Smith fan.
Yeah, well, good luck with that one, brother. Next, we have the Washington Redskins football team, Commanders, who play in Landover, going to see them boys in Dallas. You know what? There may be a controversy brewing down in the Big D with the quarterbacks, because that guy, Cooper Rush, does not look too bad. And he's doing some things that a lot of people saying that Dak Prescott can't do. But they're playing against those Commanders and the man of glass, Carson Wentz. So take them boys at home.
I agree with you on this one. I mean, I really do.
Now, this team, I'm going to pick them. So I'm telling everybody else out there, if I'm picking this team, go the other way, because every time I pick them to win, they lose. When I pick them to lose, they win. It's those crusty Browns from Cleveland going to the ATL to see those Dirty Birds down in Atlanta, the Falcons. I'm picking the Browns. I'm really trying to tell everybody else, you might want to take the Falcons because this team has burned me so many times. It's crazy. But I do like the Browns going down to ATL and beating the Falcons. And last but not least, I saved the best for last for this 1 o'clock slate. The Buffalo Bills travel to see your Baltimore Ravens, those Angry Birds down in the Baltimore. And I'm telling you, Brother B, this is a bomb burning. This is the game everyone should watch because it has a lot of implications in the future on how the playoff rankings may be. And I know you're waiting to hear.
I'm waiting. You know I'm waiting. I'm waiting.
Take the Bills. I think.
Oh, see, dog. See,
to take down those Angry Birds. And I'm gonna tell you why.
Here we go.
A couple of weeks ago, I said that Baltimore secondary was suspect, and Miami came in there and they torched them. What do you think Josh Allen's going to do? He's a hell of a lot better quarterback than Tua. I'm not taking anything away from Tua, but Josh Allen is better than Tua. If Tua torched him, Josh Allen's going to have a field day. Take the Bills to beat the Ravens.
Never.
Sorry, Brother B. Sorry about that one, but that's what it's going to be. Then we're going to move on to our 4 o'clock slate, and we have those Redbirds with that little big-headed midget going into Carolina. I'm talking about the Arizona Cardinals going to see the Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
I had to think about this one hard. I just don't like that pastry chef Baker Mayfield down in Carolina as their quarterback. So I'm going to take the Cardinals. I'm going to take the midget running around all day long, giving them fits, throwing some passes, running all over, making them miss and do what he does. So I'm going to take the Cardinals over the Panthers. Now, any other time, this game right here, I would be like, I don't know, but this is an easy one. Just take the Packers as the Patriots try to march into Green Bay and do a little something. But they're without their quarterback. and I'm talking about the Patriots, Aaron Rodgers is starting to become Aaron Rodgers again. So take the Packers and those cheeseheads over the Patriots.
Okay, got you on that one.
Now, this is a must-win for this team. So the Raiders will be hosting the Broncos, and L.A., Oakland, man, it's LV, the Las Vegas Raiders. They must win this game. This is a must-win for them at home. I have them taking down the Broncos.
Okay.
And for Sunday night, boy, do we have a good one. We got Patrick Mahomes and those Chiefs going to see Tom Brady and those Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is a rematch of the Super Bowl. And let me tell you, I don't think the outcome is going to be the same. Take the Chiefs to take down the Bucks.
You know what's funny, dog? I actually agree with you on this one. I actually agree. I really do. Mahomes was pissed last week.
He has something to prove. And
yeah,
Brady's starting to lose it. You're starting to see that Brady is starting to lose it.
His home life is affecting him. He is no longer tunnel visioned on the field. Like, his home life is starting to affect what he's doing on the field.
He's starting to show. I agree 100%, Brother B. And for Monday night, my 49ers welcome those Rams from L.A., those L.A. Rams.
Please, Rams.
Those Super Bowl champions.
Please,
and
Rams.
Brother B, I really want to take my Niners, but the Rams did something last year that they needed to do. They beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship game to get to the Super Bowl. Earlier during the season, the 49ers had their number, but when it came to the big time, the Rams took care of them. And I'm just not so convinced with porn star Jimmy G at the helm of this 49er team. I like the Rams, but guess what? They're my Niners. They're on Monday night, and they're going to beat those Rams.
Oh, you know what, dog? I was about to have a drink. I just knew for a fact that you were going to pick the Rams for a second, but you picked the 49ers every week, and for that reason, I pray Donald destroys Jimmy G, and I think he will.
I think Jimmy G will be the porn star, superstar, in the big moment that he needs to be on Monday night, because he's not. He might be out of there. So take those Niners over the L.A. Rams.
I will not.
And there's something for you, Brother B. Just because I like you, I'm going to give you my Thursday night prediction for next week.
All right.
That team that doesn't deserve the name, the Indianapolis Colts, going to Denver to play the Broncos. Will Matty Ice be the man that we think he is? Or will we see the real Russell Wilson? That's a toughie, but you know what? I kind of like Denver at home on that one.
Okay,
so
I do too.
I'm taking the Broncos over the Colts for next Thursday night, brother.
Sounds good, man.
There you have it. Those are my picks for the week, and I hope everybody gets up early and they listen to your show, and after your show, they tune in to the NFL channel, if they have it, to watch a little football from over across the pond.
I'm going to watch some. Listen. I appreciate you being on here. I got to tell you, I'm disappointed in your Ravens pick, and I'm certainly disappointed in your 49ers Rams pick. Those are the two I go against you on, and we will come back next week, and we will see who is truly the petty.
I will see you next week. Well, I will talk to you next week, Brother B. Enjoy your show. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks for having me on. Peace.
Peace, bro. Out. Well, here we are at the end of another hour, and I promise you, every single week these hours seem to go by faster and faster. But that again is because I am doing what I love to do, and I thank you so much for being with me. Again, you could have been in anywhere else in this world today, but you've chosen to be here with me and give me an hour of your time, and for that I am very, very grateful. I want to thank Tiffany Johnson for stopping by today and bearing her soul and telling us how she's feeling in her divorce. It is very fresh for her. And you know what? It is never easy. She got a little emotional, and I understand there's fear and uncertainty in every aspect of divorce. I know I've gone through it, and though I have gone through it as a man, I wanted to get a woman's perspective, because I said before, black women are getting divorced at a rate higher than any other demographic in the country. 4-1 for every one black woman that's getting married, 4 black women are getting divorced, and we need to have some real conversations about that phenomenon because it is very damaging and it doesn't bode well for black relationships and marriages throughout the country. It just doesn't. So we need to figure out, as Tiffany said, perhaps we can do a better job at choosing our mate and certainly do a better job at communicating with our mates once we're inside of the relationship. Divorce should not be the first option, and I often feel that that is the very first thing that we think about when things get hard in marriages. I also want to thank my boy The Petty for coming on as he does every week and giving us his NFL picks. Hopefully, again, he can put some money in our pockets. Go Ravens. I love my Ravens, as you should. And Lamar is just straight balling out. So enjoy him today. Enjoy your dinner. Get your rest. Get all geared up for the upcoming week because, look, tomorrow it starts all over again. And you want to get up tomorrow morning with the energy to change the world. That's what we are here to do. And please do not forget to get at me on IG at On With Brian Pettaway. I will read every single comment and message. They help me get better. And I will respond to you if you leave me something. But until that time, remember what my grandfather always used to say. The best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So again, tomorrow morning, get up from doing nothing today and change the world. That is my 2 cents worth. Have yourselves a great week. Please be safe out here in these streets. I have got to get out of here. Peace.